When U.S. military forces engage, they're usually working in concert with allies. The more entities involved and the more communications channels, the greater the chances they'll run into blockages. It's called interoperability, or a lack thereof. Joel DeLisi is the CIO of network analysis company SolarWinds. He's come up with a 3-point action plan for boosting military communications interoperability. I asked, what are some of the challenges they're facing now?
You've got interoperability that needs to happen on multiple levels, whether it's the logistical level, whether it's the tactical, strategic, you know, every single one of those different channels use a different medium of communication. You know, sometimes it's regular email, sometimes it's a real kind of real-time, you know, kind of network collaboration that is needed. And what you're dealing with is the U.S., you know, overall between the different kind of branches has at least some consistency in terms of interoperability. You know, that works out really well. But then you're bringing basically, you know, countries that make decisions on their own and they are rolled up into NATO. And sure, NATO has some guidelines and some, you know, directions about how to do interoperability there, but you're still dependent on countries that may not be on the same release cycles, for instance, of communication gears or decided to actually to go with a different vendor or things like that. And every time you see that, basically what you end up with is you end up with interoperability issues. And basically that can be a problem because you know, you're talking about, you know, potentially life and death decision when, you know, it's on the field, or you may be talking about delayed logistic, you know, kind of delivery on the field. And so it is something that actually is becoming more and more relevant because you see basically those large multinational sets of armies that are being deployed, you know, on the field to actually, you know, solve some critical issue in theater all around the world. And we bring together more and more countries that historically have not necessarily worked together.
And this is something that must be known to NATO forces because they do conduct regular exercises.
Yeah, for sure. And they do those exercises to, you know, identify those things and really kind of have contingency plans around those things. But, you know, while some of those things seems easy or seem to be, you know, kind of already being solved, some of those rear their ugly heads when you're actually kind of working in real-life scenario and not necessarily in an area where you have good communication equipment or things like that. But once you are in a remote area in Iraq or in Afghanistan or one of those countries, some of those interoperability issues may actually kind of be exacerbated by the lack of communications or reachability of some of the communication gears, for instance, that are out there. And so I think that there is a set of problems that are identified, and I think the Army and the different armies know about them. But you also bring new kind of new armies and new countries in some of those coalitions. So talking about a little bit outside of NATO, for instance, and there, you know, every time you add one more kind of country or army into this equation, it kind of makes the thing even more complicated.
And you have outlined 3 steps that you think that these military forces should take to move toward greater interoperability.
The first thing is, you know, all of this relies on network. You know, there's multiple networks that are involved, and again, depending on what you're trying to deliver, whether it's tactical, logistical, strategical, you know, theater-based, you know, information, you're going to have one or multiple networks that are, you know, involved there. And so the first basic thing that you have to do, you know, as somebody in charge of those different armies and dealing with those, you know, interoperability issues is that you have to know your network and you need to basically understand what are the performance aspects of your network and how is your network behaving even within your own confines. Because there's only one thing that's sure is once you open that to interoperability with others, you're going to make those problems that you may already have within your own entity, you're going to make that even more complicated. So that's the first step.
Okay. And step number 2, I guess, involves security.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, the typical problems that you start seeing when you interoperate, you know, okay, you know, I have connectivity between my networks, you know, and so Army A can communicate with Army B, but no, you have to figure out, okay, how much access do I need to give that other entity to my entity? For instance, how much access should I have to the network on the other side? And so for that, you need to make sure that security is really taken into account when you're planning for the interoperability there, because too much will probably kind of create, you know, vulnerabilities into your side, but not enough may not provide not enough access will not give the right amount of information to that other army in order to, you know, kind of operate effectively in theater.
Do they do that, by the way, now? I mean, is there any evidence that the armies involved test their networks and do interoperability testing as a separate and distinct activity?
And I think that they, you know, on the U.S. side, you are probably the most advanced in terms of doing that. And, you know, you've got initiatives like WinT, for instance, and groups like WinT within the Army that are really kind of in charge of deploying and making sure that you have consistent policies and things like that, you know, in place all around the different, you know, area and the different entities within the Army. The question is, do the other armies, you know, the foreign countries' armies that you're trying to interoperate with, do they have those same type of consistent policies deployed all across of their, you know, kind of divisions and whatnot? And the answer most of the time is no, because, you know, I think it's pretty clear that you've got a lot of those countries that are looking at the model of the U.S. right now from an army perspective and really kind of trying to emulate and are very interested into, you know, similar program as WinT, for instance, that they would like to actually roll out on their own.
So the third step then would be troubleshooting all of this once you've got it cobbed together.
That's right. You know, once you've got all of those things together, you know, and you think that you've done your homework on the network layout, the managing, the monitoring, you've got the right security model, and then things don't flow right. You know, and that basically at that point, what you have to do is you have to make sure that you have the right tools, the right process, and the right people in place so that you can troubleshoot those things very quickly. Because again, you know, you're not talking about, you know, a website order that's not going to be made. It can actually have literally, you know, life and death impact on the theater if some of those, you know, interoperability are not being troubleshooted in real time or with as low latency as possible.
And so there's hope for all of this.
There is hope. You know, I think that, again, as I said, I think that the U.S. is far ahead on a lot of those fronts. I think you've got tool vendors, I mean, like us and like a lot of the ecosystem basically around networking and security are making a lot of forward progress on a lot of those fronts. It's certainly one of the main keystone of a lot of the tool sets that are being out there, you know, whether it's for network or systems or storage. You know, the idea is that we need to kind of reduce the mean time to repair. And so that means that, you know, we need to make the tools so that people can really easily find those common problems. They don't have to kind of, you know, kind of go around and bring, you know, a ton of different other people basically around in order for them to actually troubleshoot and be able to fix the problem, you know. And so there's definitely hope on that, yes.
Joel DeLisi is the CIO and Chief Technology Officer of SolarWinds. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Tom.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.